is something very special happening in the poetry scene in Philadelphia. I mean, as an African-American poet, I have to say that, I mean, when I think about how, just how I met Adam, first of all, I was, what Frank's talking about, the elitist snobbies, that's me. I was like the elitist snob. We met in a slave narratives class at Arcadia University. And after, well, there was only one African-American studies class at Arcadia on the master's level, and it was slave narratives. And Adam was there, and he was like, I want to learn this. This is very important to me. You know, that's different.
It's my dude, man. It's my dude.
But after class, Adam tried to connect with me in a very, you know, human and decent way. And he was like, I hear that you're a writer, poet, whatever. You know, what are you all about? And I was like, I'm going to be the next Shakespeare. You know, and he laughed at me. Yeah. Kind of like what's going on now. He's like, ha-ha-ha, what are you talking about? You know, and I was like, no, for real. Like, in real life. And he was like, I don't know about that strange person, you know. And then, but then we started to hang out. And Adam's style of poetry, which comes from Naropa, I don't know if people know about Naropa and Ginsberg and all that. And my style of poetry, which was, you know, there no curse words, and actually kind of Victorian in a way. But you know, we came together, and instead of me continuing my normal snobbery and being like, no, I can't accept curse words, you know, or sexual images that aren't, you know, enclosed in crazy metaphors, you know, or Adam saying, what a nutcase, she just said she wanted to be the next Shakespeare. We came together and formed a group called Arsenic Pizza. And then we went, you know, we performed these poems that were political and informative and angry and sad and a mixture of things from four different perspectives, from my perspective, from Adam's perspective, and, you know, the two other people in our group. One was a professor at the school, and the other was another student at the school. And I'm like, that's, like, totally awesome. I mean, that people who have very different philosophical thinkings about what makes poetry poetry, coming together, and not just, like, doing a show in the same space and being like, whatever to that guy, but like collaborating. I mean, we sat down and collaborated. Like, we put our words together on the page, which if anyone has ever tried to collaborate, oh God. But that's a mutual respect. I had to respect Adam and his work enough, right? Adam had to respect my work enough in order to feel like we could put our words on the same page together to express something that we both believed in. That's something special, okay? That's something special. That would not have happened, you know, 100 years ago, literally, you know, let alone now. So I don't know about the New York Times article with the Renaissance thing. I don't really read the New York Times. But I do know that even in our government, I mean, we have Barack Obama going on, we have Sotomayor, we have Hillary Clinton, right? So we have all of these different things going on in our government, right? On our television, we have, you know, more shows where people, different kinds of people are thrown in, you know? It's different, it's changing, it's very different. It's different from when I started in, you know, like, 98, 99, where I would be the only African-American in a room at a poetry event that I was performing at, you know? It's very different than it was then.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any topics? Anybody want to talk to each other? You can talk afterwards. Okay, so let's open up to the audience. And do like an Oprah thing. I'll come out to the audience.
Yes.
Do it, Oprah.
Oprah
song.
And everybody look under your chair because everybody gets to
hear
that. Oh my gosh, it's
I got a new baby in my own
house. I do. Actually, you can just talk. Just talk loud enough so that this little tiny thing hears you.
So who has a comment, question?
I want to pose a question. Your name is?
Michelle Myers.
Michelle.
Yes.
What are you doing to move Asian American poetry that you described earlier? And what have you, you've already said what you've done to move your poetry into the mainstream, because a lot of that is necessary, that it comes together and laughs with his poetry or her poetry. What are you doing to bring it out and then bring others into that community?
Well, first of all, I'm part of the Asian American Female Spoken Word Duo Del Age. We appeared on HBO's Russell Simmons Deaf Poetry Jam, and I toured with Deaf Poetry. I also slammed for Deaf Poetry. We performed in the first ever live Deaf Poetry Jam performance, which was at the 2001 HBO US Comedy Arts Festival. I performed all over the country. I've performed as far away as Honolulu, Hawaii. I've been to Seattle. I've been to Portland. I've been to LA. I've been to the Bay Area. I've been to Chicago. I've been to Denver. I've been to Minneapolis. I've been far south is Atlanta. Austin, far north is Maine, etc. So I perform all over the country. And, you know, in terms of pushing Asian American spoken word poetry, I mean, Kathy and I, we're going, next year is our 10-year anniversary performing professionally as spoken word poets. And in terms of, you know, identifying ourselves and who we are, I mean, in our community, in the Asian American spoken word community, we are considered to be veterans, if not elders, in our community. So since the year 2001, we've had, every 2 years, we have an APIA Spoken Word and Poetry Summit. And so in that circle, we are identified as elders in the community, in the spoken word community. So, you know, in a nutshell, that's what I do as an Asian American spoken word.
And then how do you pull from other groups into that community?
Well, as I said before, well, you know, one thing I have to say is that Kathy and I, although we do perform predominantly in Asian American spaces because we get asked to come and perform, you know, the nature of being a professional spoken word artist is that where you make the most money is if you perform at colleges. So, you know, you're trying to get college bookings if you're trying to make any kind of a living or making any kind of money off your spoken word poetry, okay? And so we tend to perform in predominantly Asian American spaces because we get asked to come perform at colleges where Asian American student organizations have asked us to come perform. Now, every once in a while, you know, we will get asked to perform in community-based spaces. You know, back in February, Pat asked us to come and perform here. We did a feature. Gary the Storyteller was one of the folks that actually read that night. And in those spaces, they tend to be more diverse audiences. You know what I'm saying? When we performed Deaf Poetry, they were very diverse audiences, although some of those spaces were also predominantly African-American. So we do get opportunities to perform in spaces that are not predominantly Asian American spaces. Now, it's a, I'm glad that you asked me this question, what am I doing? Because I have been more actively, especially in the past year, year and a half, trying to make connections outside of the Asian American spoken word community because of what I mentioned earlier, where I went, you know, the sort of, you know, wake up call was when I went to Baltimore and I didn't know who the Fifth L were. And I should have known who the Fifth L were because they've been on the scene for 10 years. Do you know what I'm saying? They were on BT's Lyric Cafe. You know, they've you know, been grinding it out, digging it out for the past 10 years. I never heard of them before. How is it that I'm a professional spoken word poet and they're professional spoken word poets and our paths have never, ever crossed? That's what I'm saying. And so that was very upsetting to me. And then I would go, you know, my students at Community College of Philadelphia, who are, you know, most of them are African American, and they're going, and I kept urging them, go do open mics, go practice your poetry, go practice your craft. And I'm not, I don't really know what's going on in the open mic scene here in Philadelphia, and they're telling me, and then they're telling me about folks like Vision. I'm like, I don't know who Vision is, who's Vision, you know what I'm saying? And they're like, oh, you never heard of Quiet Rage? And I'm like, why is it I've never heard of Quiet Rage? Why is it that I'm only just meeting Vision a month ago? You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Or folks like that, you know, like Greg Corbin. I only just met Greg back in February when we featured here at UCAL for that Pat, the Pat feature that we did. And so, you know, what I've been trying to do is I've been trying to connect. I've been trying to dialogue with folks. I've been trying to have conversation with folks. But what I was trying to say earlier was that it's not easy. It's not easy because, and the reason why is because there is distrust there. Because people are looking at me and they're saying, well, what do you want really? It can't really be that, you know, this is just something you want to do out of the goodness of your heart to connect on a human level, et cetera, et cetera. There has to be something else. So, like, if I approach somebody, I know that they're doing an open mic, and I say, let's community build. They somehow or another are hearing that, you know what, she knows that there's something, I got a good thing going on here, and she's trying to tap into that because she's trying to promote herself.